Stony Island Audio.
And now, it's time for the Dad Bod Rap Pod with your hosts, Damone Carter, David Ma, and Nate LeBlanc.
Dad Bod Rap Pod. We're back another week. Want to let you guys know that we've actually created our own music festival just so we can uninvite the baby. That's been our
nice.
He is uninvited from the inaugural Dad Bod Rap Pod Music Festival. Who would headline that, Nate? Who would be our top headline, like top bold? It'd be Armin Hammer.
Probably. I mean, yeah. That's the first thing that comes to mind.
Okay.
Armin Hammer, Edon.
Yes.
Doom, if he was alive, RIP.
Yeah. Cut Canvas, yeah. DJing in between acts.
Okay.
If we did a festival just based on people we've interviewed, that would be like a pretty.
Oh, that'd be so lit.
Hip-hop festival.
We have MC. I'm sorry. We have MC8 running the door.
Yeah.
are you on the guest list? Yeah.
He's not letting no one in.
Oh man, that would be super dope if you think about all the various guests we've had over the course of 181 freaking episodes, man.
You gotta think at least 150 of those had guests, and every guest mm-hmm. is someone like their music. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So it's be on the lookout. This week I did learn about all the various fucking music festivals just because the baby was getting uninvited. I'm like, what the fuck is this? Like, how is, you know, it's like,
totally.
He's the Coney Island State Fair is canceled. He's not pulling up.
I just read a thing, like right before you guys clicked on in, that he told Lollapalooza he was going to do a video apology that could be shown during, like right before his set, and he didn't turn it in. So they had like no choice but to cancel the set. So like, it's, I don't mean to belittle, or like, I guess we're kind of all making fun of the circumstances here, but like, he basically didn't turn in his homework.
Yeah And
like,
it's
really what the tone of the article that I read sounded like. It's like, I need some extra credit.
Yeah,
like, I know I messed up. Come on, I had a basketball game. Like, come on. You know, my mom told me I couldn't stay awake, and then it's like, all right, I'm gonna let you write this essay.
There's no makeup assignments, dog. Like, get the fuck out of here.
Totally. Yeah, it's been very interesting to kind of watch all of that unfold. And sometimes I feel like you slip into a moment. I think when Bill Cosby, when the world came for him after Hannibal Buress's joke, there's these weird triggers that start moments, and you never know when it's going to happen. I do think this could be the moment where rap really has to take into account that like homophobia is a liability. For a larger artist
in the lyrical content, I don't think you need to like make big speeches in your banter. Like, I think the lyrical content will continue getting a pass personally.
You think so?
I do.
Yeah.
It's different to go out of the artist moment and just be a person standing up there with 100%. A microphone and like kind of mm-hmm. ranting. It like, I never watched his actual comments, but apparently they're pretty vile. And it just, like, I think it was a bridge too far. But I haven't seen anyone getting canceled for their actual lyrical content yet.
I mean, Ghostface's most recent album, dude, the F word is on display, and it's like, ouch, every time. But I felt like that got a pass. But if he was on stage, like, making a little speech that was out of pocket, then that'd be a different issue, to your point, Nate.
It's kind of, you know, I don't think anybody really wants a reckoning around hip hop lyrics. Like, and the other side of that coin is law enforcement using lyrics against them, which is such a huge and pervasive problem. I was just listening to, actually just finished today, the Complex Pop Smoke, Complex Subject Pop Smoke podcast, which is really well done and was written and reported by our friend Sean Sotero. And you will hear more about that.
Yeah.
Watch this space, but that was a big thing in his very brief rise and fall. And it just reminded me of how pervasive that is. Like going back to like X-rated.
Yeah. I was going to say Romper Room. Yeah. A lot of the case against them was built around.
It's just,
yeah.
It's just crazy how true that is. So it's like, on the one hand, it's like fans are willing to give almost anything a pass, but the police are fully watching what everything you're saying and applying it. Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. It's interesting what you say, Damone, and we're certainly having a moment and it's good that we're all talking about this, but I don't know. I think the two things are slightly different. Do you agree? Do you disagree?
I do think at DaBaby's level, as somebody who listened to a bunch of his stuff, his musical content is actually not homophobic at all. Like there are rarely any references. So I was a little bit like, dude, where are you even coming from with your rant? But I do think artists at his level, it's gonna be a non-starter now. Like I think you're gonna see more folks being careful because he lost a lot of money. Like the baby's booking fee has to be in excess of $200,000 or something ridiculous. So if you think about all of these shows that he's lost, I do feel that the industry pays attention, even if Fools haven't had a change of heart. The impact on the pocketbook is like undeniable. And so, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if that actually extends to lyrics. I have a theory, and it holds for podcasts too, that nobody listens to lyrics and nobody listens to the content of a podcast. So it gives me a lot of freedom to talk whatever here, because I'm like, nobody's going to come and listen to this. But then like 1,000+ people do every week. So it pokes holes in my theory. But I just feel like there's so much rap and people say so many things. I feel like it's easy to give things passes at a certain level, but we'll see if that continues.
I mean, I'm like beyond on the record on this show as being like a staunch lyric listener, and like you don't have to align with my morals for me to like your music. Like I can give a pretty wide berth to things, especially older rap music. Like sure. Most of it is repugnant sure. from a moral standpoint, to be honest with you. It's just like, you know, like am I gonna not like the Ghetto Boys? Like I don't really feel like that's a position that one can take in good conscience and still say they like rap music, you know what I mean? But like we get Ooh, that it's
that's tough.
Somewhat satirical, and like, you know, that there's like a cinematic quality to it, where like I like action movies, I like, you know, with that we've had this argument many times, but I just think it's sometimes the songs are from points of views of characters, and that gives you a pretty wide berth in what you're allowed to say. And sometimes you don't even have to give them that pass. You can just be like, I like this song no matter what it says. We touched on this when we did our
Corrupt. Ain't No Fun. Yeah, yeah. When Corrupt was on. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I always come from the easy for us cisgender guys to say.
Right.
Right.
You know, whether people care or whether, you know, you have to like something. I feel like it's been a very interesting time. And so I've been a more of a spectator on this particular kerfluffle and just watching it unfold. So we'll see. Doja Cat survived blowing the bag maybe 3 or 4 times. So maybe there's hope for DaBaby in that regard. But shout out to everybody trying to hold people accountable here for it. On this program, we talk about a great many things, but the main thing we talk about is rap. I know rap, my man. And this week is no different. We have a great interview with Dudley Perkins / Declaim, who came on and talked to us about a new project that he has, a newly released project that he has with Madlib. But it got us to thinking about, like, number one, Madlib is fucking amazing. And so that's not a great podcast segment, but I just want to start there. Dude is fucking amazing. But he has these collaborations. He's become very known for the, you know, Mad / Lib collaborations he's done with folks. Of course, we have Mad Villain, we have J-Lib. Most recently, we have the Mad Gibbs projects, Pinata and Bandana. And I wanted to put it out to this group. What is it about Madlib's music that makes him such a great collaborator? Is it merely that his beats are dope and so that's just gonna work for anybody? Is it kind of like the Shaquille O'Neal, you put him anywhere, he's gonna give you 30 and 10? Or is it Or is there something in his approach to working with different artists that makes him so prolific with the collabs? I'll start with you, Mr. Nate LeBlanc. What do you think makes Madlib such a great collaborator?
This might be a little bit counterintuitive, and it's not any of the things you mentioned. I think one of the things, and certainly his greatness is a prominent feature, is that he has so much music. Like, if you just like wanted to do a rap album, you could like go to any of the numbers of beat CDs he has released as commercial products and rap over them, and you could make a pretty good album, right? Yeah. Imagine the trove once you decide he wants to work with you. He's always making new stuff. He has all this unreleased stuff. Like, I think there's a lot to sift through, and it would be very interesting for a lot of these artists to hear what he thinks they would sound good over. Because part of, he's not just a beat maker, he's a producer, right? Like, right. These are produced projects where it has a vision, and like, you know, there's a back and forth to them, like where he gives you some beats, you write to him, and then things happen behind the scenes, and then it ends up coming out or not. But I think just the sheer amount of beats and the sheer directions that could push a writer, I think we really see this most clearly in the Freddie Gibbs thing. It's like he's one MC before he works with Madlib, and then public perception of him shifts completely because you're like, oh, that's not who I thought we were dealing with. I thought he was a pretty straightforward gangster rapper from Gary, Indiana, who happened to be on Decon, which was a little weird. And then it's like after Pinata, you're like, oh, you're like this amazing rapper who can go over anything, kind of. And you proved it by working with Madlib, who's one of the greats. So I think that just that's a starting place for
volume. Just the sheer volume of music. Dave, what say you? Why is Madlib such a great collaborator?
I think with Madlib, I mean, to Nate's point, I mean, I think he literally has like 80 albums because he releases under so many different monikers. But I think with Madlib, and you know, I sort of compare it to like Alchemist or something. You're not just like matching with the producer, but you're matching with their sensibilities and their palette. And Madlib's palette since the beginning has been always a little bit weird, right? Always a little bit jagged. And you know, through our conversation with Declaim, I mean, the album that was released, which was B-sides and mixtape cuts, originally recorded in 1994. So even those early beats, you hear sort of weird samples that are a little bit left field. So I think with Madlib, not only is his just the pure amount of work that he has, but I also think like the notion of Madlib, like how do you sound over a Madlib beat? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like a Prince Paul album is a Prince Paul album, but you can hear like a boom bap Prince Paul beat and not know that it's from him. You know what I mean? It could be, you know, of anybody else's beat. Just name a boom bap producer, but Madlib beat is a Madlib beat.
Yeah, there's volume, but then he still has this distinctive thing that resonates through all the projects, really. I mean, if you just listen to the Mad Villainy instrumentals, for instance, you could hear any number of people over those tracks and it would still be great. None better than Doom. But I feel like he's a producer, but like he has rapper sensibilities. And I think that a lot of times producers who don't rap, I always think there's like somewhat of a little disconnect. I would be shocked if Alchemist doesn't kind of like rap under his breath when he's like making the beats, because they're so rappable. Like sometimes a producer will make a beat and I'm like, I know you feel that this is fucking amazing and you did all these things, but like nobody can rap on that.
Alchemist raps though. Like he's like fully rapped. He started as a rapper and like he has joints where he raps now. Like he raps. Alchemist.
Oh, Alchemist, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay. Yeah, he started in a rap group with Scott Conn. James Conn's son, the Hooligans, show. Yeah,
he was in the Hooligans.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
As recently as some of his like producer's best friend joints, like he has shit where he's rapped on it. Like he doesn't have as much of a rap career as Madlib does, but he does rap.
Okay. But definitely not surprising in the sense that he makes things that are very rappable, and I think Madlib does something similar where he brings an empathetic ear for rappers to the beats. I would say that absolute opposite of this is like Flylo, they'll have rappers on his stuff, but it always sounds like it was low key a challenge to incorporate somebody because he's such a I don't know what you want to call it, vibrant producer. He's doing all of these soundscapes and things where I feel like Madlib understands how to be weird and how to scale things down and scale things back. And so I feel like rappers a lot of times sound great on his stuff because he makes it with a rapper's perspective. This is just, maybe we'll get to talk to him one day. That is just my my theory on why that works. We all know about Mad Villainy, of course, but Madlib has a shit ton of collaborative projects. And I wanted to call out a couple because I'm actually not familiar with all of these. Did anybody ever check out The Professionals with him and
Ono?
It's the
album with his brother. I checked out a couple tracks. I thought it was okay. Honestly speaking, I'm not the hugest Ono fan. I think he's just tight.
Yeah. And he's also got one with Med and Blue, Bad Neighbor from 2015, which I really like those instrumentals. And I think I agree with you, as I don't know if I'm the biggest Med and Ono fan to carry it, but I feel like Madlib is also cool because he still do tracks with his dudes. Like there's something to be said for that as well. Did anybody hear his collaborative album Liberation with Talib Kweli?
Yeah.
Yes. That's one of my favorite Talib albums. I'm not super huge on it, but I loved how sort of it sounded like it was made on a four track. I mean, it probably was, but you know what I mean? That was definitely the purveying theme to it too.
So yeah, I think there's like these huge projects, which we know all about his major collaborations, but then there are these kind of other smaller collaborative albums, which I just think speaks to his prowess that like he's working with so many different MCs and making these like collaborative albums with folks that you wouldn't maybe necessarily expect.
Well, not even MCs only. I mean, if we're talking about his career, I mean, the really, really, really early stuff, like with the claim that we're gonna like hear about soon. However, I mean, even his latest stuff is the album with Fortet.
Yeah, which is not listed amongst
Sound Ancestors.
Yeah, not listed amongst his collaborations, but is definitely we've talked about that album quite a bit on here. You can hear the kind of cross-pollination with Fortet in his sound, which maybe that's the key. Like if you're super dope and you can also be malleable to like incorporate the artistry of other folks that you're working with, which maybe seems like, oh, of course, but I don't think it's always the case.
I'm gonna posit a little kind of curveball here for you guys and say that one of Madlib's best collaborators is himself as Quasimodo.
Well done, yeah. Sir.
Yeah,
that one was unseen. I wasn't really.
but he had some good adventures, you know.
he's lording over the tracks.
And we're not really talking about J-Lib. Like I feel like for a lot of people, when we have focused on Mad Villainy online, or be like, what are you guys like not like talking about J-Lib? And I've just never been the biggest J-Lib guy.
Have we had this conversation? I feel like I've brought that to the party once or twice.
I feel like we skirted the conversation a little bit.
Okay. Out of fear of being pelted with tomatoes and such. But I will say this. I feel like with J-Lib, it's two mastermind producer rappers trading off. And I think if we map out their four quadrants of skill sets, like Dilla rapper, Dilla producer, Madlib rapper, Madlib producer, it don't always hit with J-Lib. Like the best Dilla rapping is not on J-Lib, and some of the best Madlib stuff is not necessarily in there. It's very strange. I feel like there's iconic cuts. I mean, the red is the red. There's joints, but it just sometimes, I don't know. It didn't hit me the same.
I feel like a lot of people love it though. A lot of people love that album, and it's such sacrilege just to even mention that, you know, something by Dilla or Madlib can be mediocre.
Especially in that time when they're kind of both on Stone's Throw. I feel like the Dilla Changed My Life shirt crowd, like, is for that's like the Bible for them, and I'm just like, I just don't feel that way, dude. I just not like the this is not my favorite work from either of them. And anyway,
I'm surprised, because I'm a disciple, not in the corny t-shirt way that Nate is describing, but I am a disciple of a lot of Dilla stuff, and I remember kind of being really excited about it at the time. But I'm just saying, over the test of time, I don't go for it. And I'm always like, why don't I go for it more? And when I do, I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Someone was just asking our opinion on the Common Electric Circus album on Twitter. And I was just like, it was misunderstood at the time. It has some joints, but I never want to listen to it. Actually, I think what I said was like, I never throw it on. Like, when I'm deciding what to listen to, never listen to that. Like, I understand it from like a critical perspective. I've reappraised it. I reappraised it, and now I don't want to listen to it. You know what I mean? So I think that's kind of what you're saying, Damone, is like
a little
you had your initial feeling, you have your now feeling, and you're not there's just a lot of music in the world. Like, that's just not one you're going back to often.
But I'm probably wrong. So before you guys come with with pitchforks and stuff, this is probably a weird quirk of myself and the bros here. So Madlib has done these amazing collaborations with a variety of different artists. What could be next? Like, let's speculate, prognosticate, dream, wish. What would be the dream collab with Madlib that we've yet to hear fleshed out?
I'm pretty sure he has a full album with Fly Anakin that is recorded, and I don't know if it's going to come out or not, but I would love to hear that.
Well, sort of on that tip, I mean, we've been hearing a lot of rumors regarding his lost EP with Mac Miller, as well as that project with Logic, which I hope doesn't see the light of day. But like, I mean, in terms of collaborations, I mean, maybe another one with himself, Nate, and not Quaz, though. I would love like a crazy Madlib instrumental album with movements and change ups and fucking weird shit. Not just a rapless version of an album.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's interesting. One thing we didn't talk about, and I know Dave in particular jokes about this, but one of his best collaborative albums is with the Percy P album, Perseverance.
Oh, I was going to bring that up.
Billed as, like, now if that came out, it would be billed as Madlib and Percy P, and Madlib would be the bigger star.
P-Lib.
But back then, it was just like, there was so many... There's a lot of bad ways to take that one. I'm trying to refrain. It was like the album is fully produced by Madlib. It came out on Stone's Throw, but that wasn't really a huge part of the.
He wasn't billed that way then, right? You know,
it wasn't. I'm not saying it wasn't like done that way. I'm saying it wasn't billed that way. That's exactly
my
point, Dave. And it's funny because like. I happen to be a bigger Percy P fan than like the average person. And I really like that record because it's the most concentrated dose of Percy P you can get. Mm-hmm. Like before there's just like scattered singles and mixtape cuts and you know, all that stuff. But it's not the most successful collaboration, I would imagine. I don't know if Madlib at that time was the right producer to do a full album for Percy. And maybe Percy is just not an album artist.
Yeah, I think it's the confluence of both of those things. And but I think a Madlib Percy P album could be successful if it was sort of redone.
Right. And and it's funny because like Stone's Throw used to like have so much budget for stuff like this. Like it was
I know.
There was 12 inches, there was promos. I still have like a big stack of stickers from that. Like there was posters, there was a remix record, there was a bonus disc. Like it was just so crazy how big they went on these things that like they're for like a niche audience. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
I don't know. It was just, it's an interesting like sign of the times. That wasn't that long ago, but it was also an eternity ago.
The physicals, the era of physicals, like Stone's Throw was a monster.
Said this up before, but they were just very generous with the promos. Like we were a good account for them, and like it was just like we just got copies of everything. So it was really, it was a good time to be a hip hop buyer if you liked stuff like that. And I liked some of it. And like you guys were kind of talking about some of the kind of other like Oxnard MCs. It's like I don't know what to do with this promo, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
right. I that makes me sort of think back at Loop Pack. stuff. Sure. Like, I'm not really into that stuff. What do you guys think about?
No, that's so interesting. I feel like at the time, they had really captured the backpack zeitgeist for like 18 months, for like maybe 18, 24 months. They were it. They were like, oh, they have this head nodding producer guy. They're just getting on there. They're all styling out, but like not in the completely untouchable Freestyle Fellowship way, but like barring out, like you would hear somebody doing a cipher, and you know, you, so there was a time, I think with Loot Pack, that wave kind of crested, and I don't know that they necessarily, I haven't heard too much of the late stuff, but it seemed like they really shined for a moment, and then that sound kind of died down a little bit. A similar thing to me happened with the Alkoholics.
Yeah, I was gonna, I was gonna say, like, it's very Alkoholics-y, and I like stuff like that. Like, it's like the whole ethos of that kind of style of rap is like, make a dope beat and then rap to it.
Yeah,
right. You know what I mean?
It's not like hugely conceptual. It's not like the deepest thing you'll ever hear, but it's fun and the rapping is good and the beats are obviously really good. And I was gonna say, when we were talking about all this like heady, like later Madlib stuff, is like, I kind of still think of Madlib as the guy from Loot Pack.
Like, yeah, still, yeah,
that's how
yeah.
he was introduced into my consciousness. And it's like, you know, it's like, in a way, that's like it's like, I say this all the time on the show and in real life, it's like, my favorite book by an author is always the first one I read, because it's like how you
the get first one you them. Read,
right. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying Sound Pieces is my favorite Madlib album or even my favorite Madlib collaboration album, because that would be crazy, but it does have a soft spot.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he's definitely retained some of that when he does get around to rapping. It's still Madlib from Loot Pack, which I appreciate. Even when you hear Quasimodo stuff, you're like, the cadences and stuff, I dig it in a very nostalgic way sometimes. But the guest we have on today, Dudley Perkins, has a newly released project with Madlib called In the Beginning, comprised of tracks from the 90s, which is really interesting. And he talks a bit about, you know, why that was in the vaults for so long, and what it's like to have that come out now. And so we were fortunate to catch up with him. He breaks down the whole kind of Oxnard hierarchy of rappers and producers, which is really cool. He talks this great story about why he did this kind of sing-songy vocalizing thing on those records. And so it was great to check in with him. And let's get right to it. This is our interview with Declaim, a.k.a. Dudley Perkins, Dad Bod Rap Pod. Dad Bod Rap Pod, every week on this program, we have interviews with people who are moving and shaping hip hop culture. This week is no different. We have joining us in Zoom a man of multiple names and multiple talents, Dudley Perkins / Declaim. What's happening, man?
Hey, how you doing, man?
Good, good. Thanks for coming on the program. I want to ask, you know, off top, can you tell us a little bit about your upbringing, your hip hop upbringing in Oxnard, and kind of your relationships with Madlib and the Loot Pack and everybody that we know and love from down there? Like, were y'all all in high school? Like, how did that whole thing start? Can you give us a little background?
There's a lot of people that we work with, a lot of the crew members met up different timelines and stuff, you know. Me, for instance, I met Madlib. I lived across the street from him years ago when I was a kid. That's how I found out that he did music back then, because he was doing the music back then. Mm-hmm. You know, but like other crew members, a lot of them went to high school together. You know, like Loot Pack and Kazi and Metaphor and stuff like that. They all went to high school together, you know. But during the music phase of the when everybody was really getting down, I came in kind of like the last cat. Mm. But I was allowed to come in because Madlib was like family, and Ono, you know, and his people are like family to me, you know. So they're like my cousins, so I've known them for all my life, you know.
Word. Well, yeah, you know, well, you mentioned Madlib and Ono, and I was reading that your father was friends with their father. And, you know, yeah. We know that Ono and Madlib grew up in a sort of musical household because their father was a musician. You know, that makes me think, what was your musical household like? What was your upbringing?
My father, my stepfather was a DJ.
Oh, okay. Okay.
He used to DJ at a club called King Arthur's in Oxnard on Savory's Road, like in the late 70s. Mm. Basically, he was like one of the first cats in the neighborhood to have 212s in the mixer, you know, with the whole DJ setup. Because way back, my stepfather used to have he transformed the backyard into a club kind of like, you know, with the canopy, you know, he built a shed out there and it was a club, you know, the records. And my grandmother owned a record store. She owned the first record store in Oxnard.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And actually the first black barbershop in Oxnard also. And she had the record store. It was on Woolley Road a long time ago. A lot of cats probably don't remember. It was on J Street. It's called Total Experience. And she owned a record store. So she always had records on deck. You know, so when my stepfather came into play, you know, he was able to go record shopping with my grandmother. And so he had a lot of records. You know, we record shopped in L.A. a lot. But my father was a DJ. You know, I was influenced through him, through music, from music, my stepfather. You know?
Wow. That's amazing. How would you say the Oxnard sound is defined? Like, you, it sounds like you and your crew like are very prolific. And what would you say sets your music apart from other crews, other areas?
But there's many crews in Oxnard. You know, they got crews like Red Zone Fam, Epsilon Projects, Funk Farm, you know, and then there was CDP. Those are some of the crews that I'm familiar with because I was back then I was down with them like that, you know. But what set our crew apart was it was like a bedroom producers and garage producers like Cankick, which is Madlib's beat partner, old beat partner, you know, still beat partner family, you know. They would just constantly crank out beats, you know, and Madlib was, you know, that's what he did. You know, Can't Kick, Ono, that's what they do. They make beats. You know, even Kazi and Metaphor made beats back then. You know what I'm saying? Kazi still makes beats right now. You know, so that's what they do. You know, so we was always known for innovating something new, though, like something way, way different. Mm-hmm. I mean, what set us apart is we had Can't Kick and Madlib.
Yeah. Pretty good position to start from.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, and you know, my first producer actually was a cat named Dwayne Holland. DYD. I used to go to high school. I went to school with him all my life. And we used to do funk music and stuff, you know. And my brother actually was like, remember Madlib? He's like, remember Otis who lived across the street? Remember him? I'm like, yeah. He goes, no, they doing music right now. And they really getting down. My brother was in school with them. I graduated a little earlier than them. You know, I'm older than them. You know, and one day he drove me to Cankick's garage, you know, and he was like, hey, my brother want to rap, like, hook it up. You know what I'm saying? That's how I met Cankick. I met Cankick through my brother.
Okay.
Lael, you know what I'm saying? And the rest was history from there, you know what I'm saying? Because I had to fight my way in the trenches with them cats. Them cats were no joke.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? They were serious. And, you know, because you got cats like Wild Child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? You got a DJ like DJ Rome's and you got MCs like God's Gift, and we had a cat named E-Dog, Emmett. He rest in peace, you know what I'm saying? He was like one of the foundations of our crew. And he got shot years back, but he was like, he's what put the wiggle on what we was doing, like made us realize that. Rest in peace, E-Dog, you know what I'm saying? He was the one who let us know, him and God's Gift, actually.
Okay.
He made it in Lupac. They made us step our game up. The rest of us MCs that was rolling with them, you know what I'm saying? You know, because like God's Gift was like far beyond his, be far beyond years, be for, beyond anything I've ever heard back then. And I said, like, wow, how's this guy? Dude, man, he's amazing. And he was so spiritual and beautifully spiritual. Like, one, what was one of his verses? Something like, cut something like gin and juice, trying not to get caught up, but keep my fist balled up. I make your head swell up because I know my skills develop. Any disbeliever, we can step up and settle it. You know, you have bars and stuff, you know, like God's Gift had bars, you know what I'm saying? The whole crew had bars. We, you know, we had dancers, you know, like dancer MCs and singers like Nico Anderson and stuff like that. You know, these are names in Oxnard that are like, you know, underground legends, I guess, because we put it down, you know?
Yeah.
We ain't the only ones. There's other crews out there that did it. You know what I'm saying? But I know we set a foundation when we started going overseas and doing shit. You know what I'm saying?
Definitely, definitely. Wanted to ask you a little bit about your kind of debut to the world was on an Alcoholics single, and I wondered how that came about, and did you notice things change for you after being featured on the record?
Well, the first record I was actually on was a mixtape with DJ Babu.
Okay.
It was called Beyond Comprehension, and the B-side was mixed by Can Kick. And that's actually the first time anybody ever heard me on anything.
Okay.
You know, and after that, Madlib's father put out a CDP called Psych Move EP, and we all did a posse cut on there with Lupac. You know, then you know, that was a long time ago. Then when the Alcoholics, you know, was rolling with Madlib like that, you know, Tash was really rolling with our crew and stuff like that, you know what I'm saying? Big up to the Liquid Crew, you know, they was like mentors and stuff, you know, at least showed us the doorway a little bit, you know. So, but when I got on that album, I had a bunch of albums with Madlib already done.
Okay.
You know, and, you know, I was trying to shop with, like everybody else was, and got it in the hands of Licks. And they was like, we want that track, the W Licks track. And I have a whole, in fact, on volume two of In the Beginning, you'll hear the original.
It was your joint that they heard it, they repurposed it, and be like, all right, you on it, but this is our track.
Long, it was like a 7 minute long joint, like 3-4 long bars. You know what I'm saying? Like,
okay,
I was on my Rakim shit back then.
I heard that. Was it noticeable after that came out? Is that when you felt like a lot of people started understanding who you were? Opportunities open up.
Well, I mean, I wasn't really. I did a few shows with them, like in Santa Barbara and stuff like that. You know, but I was really more focused on what we was doing as a crew. You know, CDP. Crate Diggers Palace and Funk Farm. And I've always been trying to put my crew out there, you know what I'm saying? Like, they need to, these guys is funky people, you know what I'm saying? So I was, you know, that was, you know, I'm like a general of the crew a little bit. Like, I was always kind of directing things and stuff like that, you know?
Okay.
But when I did that album on with the Licks, you know, it kind of like put me in the game. As like, okay, you can't, it's just not an underground cat. He's, you know, he's on a major record and shit like that. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I didn't slack on there either. I had probably the longest verse on the whole album.
Thanks for that, man. Yeah, you know, I'd like to jump around just a little bit and talk about your endeavor with your record label, Some Other Shit. It's you and Georgia and your partner. Tell us a little bit about that and sort of what being a label head allows you to do artistically versus maybe just, you know, being a rapper on a label.
Well, I started the label with Georgia Ann. Right now we're not together right now, so we've been separated for a minute, you know. So she has a label, Epistrophic Peach Sound. It's her original that she was working with before we got together. So she's, you know, branding that and making things happen with that. So right now on Some Other Shit, I've actually, I'm working with a few other new artists that's coming out. I got some beautiful artists right now that I'm working with. One of them, the name is Hyro. Okay. He has an album coming out, an EP coming out called Soil. Because I did a joint venture with Fat Beats, and I also did a joint venture with a distribution called Believe right now. So I'm dealing, and, you know, I still got my deal with Entertainment One. I got a record out with Entertainment One still. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I've been just, you know, trying to find a niche with the how the labels run and how to really make one function. So mm-hmm. right now I'm really more of a production company.
Okay.
So some Mothership Productions, some Mothership Records. So I'm actually just building artists up right now. I have this one artist I'm working with named West Coast Stone. You know, amazing cat. He's a funk man. You know what I'm saying? I got this mm-hmm. other cat. You probably heard of him. His name's Cornbread. He used to be in a group called Cali Wild mm-hmm. from Oxnard. And that's an affiliate of CDP and Funk Farm also. His name is Cornbread. His album's called A Breath of Fresh Air. It's featuring production by Knots. It has Brand Nubian on it. Oh, you know, Chuck, okay. Big Shug from Group Home. You know, yeah. many other artists on it. It's a pretty, mm-hmm. pretty big, dope album. You know what I'm saying? Like, in fact, I got some funky stuff. Like this dude named Joshua Collins, he's actually my cousin. He's a producer and a pianist. Mm. You know, so I'm cultivating artists right now. And because, you know, the last few albums that I did release, they kind of like was, they were sort of successful. Okay. I would say, like, you know, we dropped a record a couple years back, got a Grammy nomination when I worked with a company called Brainfeeder. I'm pretty sure you know mm-hmm. that is Flying mm-hmm. Lotus. So I partnered up with Brainfeeder with an album, and it got a Grammy nomination, you know. And then so after that, I released a jazz album titled Joy Tea. And that's still kind of humming. That's still humming a little bit right now.
Okay.
So right now I'm like trying to see, okay, if this executive power got any power. I'm being very careful with what I'm doing and how I'm moving.
Right.
And who I'm dealing with. And, you know, actually, you know, because I do a lot of work with Metaphor. Mm. He has a label called Bang Your Head Records, which is doing a lot of good music right now. You got to peep at a lot of stuff that he puts out as his classic music that he puts out. You know, so me and him and Elemental are actually doing a new album. We're working on a new album right now, produced by Madlib.
Wow.
It's almost done too. It's okay. Sick.
Wow.
Yeah. The old. What's up, bro?
Between MED and Elemento, you guys almost have all the letters.
Yeah. It's the album called LMD.
Nice. I was wondering, and I apologize if you've had to answer this question so many times before, but if this is the only time I ever get to talk to you, I just always have been curious about this. Was singing and doing your funk stuff something you always wanted to do when you were coming up, and then at some point you felt comfortable releasing it? Or was it like a transition in your taste where you were like, okay, I'm going to not rap as much, but you always still rap. I'm going to show people my singing side more.
I've always done it with my rap. Mm-hmm. You know, but just not intense like that, you know? And then one day Peanut Butter Wolf came out to Santa Barbara to Madlib's house, and we all stayed the night there. Partied all night, and at the end of the night, we was like, all right, just go home. Madlib went straight to making beats. So I'm up too, like, oh, this is an opportunity to get in some extra shit without the crew around. I'm at Madlib's house in Santa Barbara. You know, make some music right there, you know? So Biden hadn't written, so I sung Flowers. Like for like 7-8 minutes, I just sung it, like 10 minutes, probably 14 minutes probably. Sung all these riffs and all this fun stuff. What you heard was cut down, condensed. Condensed that. But after a year or two, you know, I went back to Vegas and I was going through some stuff. And, you know, Egon hit me up and was like, remember that Flower song? You know, we love that song. We want to release that. I'm like, oh, for real? That's crazy. You know, at first they was going to like, let's get a band together. I can't remember the band name. It might have been the Fortet or something. I can't remember what the band name was, but they was going to have me work with them or something. I said, no, I'll do it with Madlib, though. Because they said, we want you to do a whole singing album. Because that wasn't really my idea.
Okay.
That was actually Egon's idea and shit. You know? And just to be around my homie, because he's such a bright spirit, I was like, I'll do it. I ain't seen Madlib in a couple years. You know, I missed the dude. Because, you know, we all went our separate ways, traveling the world and doing all kind of other stuff. You know what I'm saying? And we didn't really get to catch up much. And I got to catch up with him on those two albums, which was, so I, you know, I'm like, the first one, you know, the first singing album, I really freestyled the whole thing.
Wow.
You know, I probably did it in like 2 days.
Okay.
And that's when I realized after I heard, I was like, damn, I can't sing.
That's then, wild. You know, it was ahead of its time,
it.
Though.
But they felt it. The label was like, let's roll. I'm like, are y'all serious? I'm like, shit, let's go there. Shit. I guess. You know what I'm saying? I would have chosen to do a whole different. I would have rapped a whole new.
Really?
Album, you know, okay. I did the And So It Is Said with Madlib and Can't Kick. And that, to me, is like one of my better albums. And So It Is Said. You know, but then when Lil Light, I did a Lil Light and singing and all that, it kind of hit me like, dang, I'm probably one of the first MCs to actually do this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a full MC.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But now I have a full record with no rap on it at all.
That's wild.
You know what I'm saying? I know a lot of rappers are saying, Biz Markie's, what's his name? Slick Rick, excuse me, Slick Rick. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Most Def and all them, they all sing. They all do that little thing. They get the groove. It's something that you can't help it when sometimes you just gotta sing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I think I was one of the first who actually sung a whole album like that and meant it. Mm-hmm. And I was going off of Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Is that right?
That's dope.
I was trying to do Earth, Wind, and Fire. Like, let me get spiritual on them. You know what I'm saying? Cause I already read a lot of books, theologies, philosophies, and everything. You know, I was already trying to figure things out already. I was going through things in life. So I'm like, let me sing some real things that are really, really close to me. You know, but when the way Wolf and them tripped off it, I'm like, oh shit, y'all really like this, you know? You know, the money song and the mama and all that. They try to dress me up and put me in hats and have my hair out and shit like that and photos and leather jackets and shit. I'm like, okay, if it's gonna make me some money, I guess.
Okay.
I really don't. Fuck, but I don't really go that way. You know what I'm saying? I don't really trip. I ain't fancy like that. I ain't no, you know. I just ain't no thing like that. I'm from the street. I'm from Cervenos.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
So the homies see me dressed like that, they might be like, "Hey, homie, what's wrong with you?" And then you know, I guess it made a little money, so they offered a second record called Expressions, and that's when I actually tried to sing. Mm-hmm. And I mixed the rapping and poetry at the same time. I did everything on that record. I didn't just limit it. So when I did a record called Holy Smokes, I was more versed in what I was doing on that album to where I had every style of anything. On Holy Smokes, if you check it out, there's like 30 songs of all different styles.
Mm.
Singing, poetry, spoken word, rap, singing, the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Beautiful album. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that background. Let's talk a little bit about the release that's coming up. In the Beginning, Volume 1. This is some older material that the world has never heard and is coming out. By the time you hear this, it'll be already out. So yeah, tell us about that project. What can folks expect, and when it will be out?
I mean, I'm still actually getting used to it myself again. You know, because at first I'm like, should I be putting this out, man? This is crazy. This is some old ass shit. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, you know, when I had the original files and stuff back then, I was trying to put it out on Wax myself anyways.
Okay.
You know, I was trying to do my own label back then. And it meant a lot to me too. And plus, I wanted my children to see what I was doing when I was young. Mm-hmm. My children rap too. You know, I got two artists that in my family that my daughter and my son rap, Riley Fresh and Miss Desi. And Miss Desi has been on records with Saul Williams and Latoya Williams, Aloe Black. You know, she's been on records with cats like that. That's my daughter. You know, and my son's working on a project, you know. And he actually got a voice. He got, you know, like Guru said, it's the voice that gets you up. It's the voice that gets you up. He got one of them voices, you know what I'm saying? So I'm working on him, you know, I'm about to pass the torch to him, you know what I'm saying? Like, here, handle this, Tom. You know?
Okay.
But, you know,
That's dope, man. That's dope. Thank you. You know, sort of as we bring it to a close, we've brought up Madlib so much. I mean, it seems like he's such a prominent part of
the dude's dope, man.
Your like, artistry. Like, talk, man. Oh, we know. Like,
real talk, we know. Like, real shit. The dude's dope.
That's so good.
That's like, so
accurate.
I'm so happy what's going on for him right now because it should have happened a long time ago.
Right.
But he used
right.
to always say we're 5 years ahead of our time here. We'll catch up. He's getting what he deserves right now, and he deserves way more because he done freaked people out with some of the funkiest beats that the world has ever seen. I don't care who you want to put him up against or whatever. My top producer is him.
That's crazy, man. Well,
that's my number one producer in my real. You know, if you got the top five, yeah. I could name my top two. You know, my ex is my ex. My baby's mother is Georgia Ann Muldrow is like my two because I've seen her do some amazing shit.
That's dope, man.
You know, the homies don't get mad at me like she don't love you. And she don't, you know, but real talk. She's an amazing creative. Madlib is amazing creative. Like Madlib is always trip us out, always. Like always has something good for us. That's you know, dope. One day, you know, one day he has a record called Walkman Flavor. That might get unearthed one day.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And he busted flows. The dude had bars because, you know, even me and Metaphor always say, you know, out of back then, you know, it was either between him or Wild Child with the bars.
Okay.
With them creative bars. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You know, Wild Child is always, Wild Child is Wild Child. He's MC. He's a true MC. You know what I'm saying? Like, the epitome of true MC is Wild Child. But Madlib had them bars too. You know? If y'all would have heard the new Lupac album that they was working on, man.
Oh man,
yeah.
Oh, Madlib probably got a trillion songs that you'll never hear. Ono probably got a trillion songs that you will never hear.
Okay.
Can Kick probably got a trillion things you will never hear. Amazing things. True, even Metaphor got beats up in there. You know what I'm saying? That you know, I'd be trying to. Where's them old tapes at, man? That we were working on.
That's what's up, man. I appreciate you kind of sharing a little bit behind the scenes about the crew, about your experience. We want to let everybody know that in the beginning, Volume 1 is going to be out by the time you hear this. And Declaim, we want to thank you for coming on, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, let people know about that record. It's going to be fun for them. Something for the summer.
Okay.
You know, and to prepare them for Volume 2 and 3.
Okay. You got that Harry Potter game. You got the trilogy lined up. Okay. That's what's up. That's what's up, man. Thank you so much.
I appreciate you guys.
Thank you, man.
One love.
All right, that was our interview with Dudley Perkins, aka Declaim. We want to thank him for coming on. What will always stick with me from that interview, because I wrote it on a post-it when he said it, and I just had it on my whiteboard for like weeks, was the dude is dope. Like he just took time out of the interview to be like, let's just stop and recognize the greatness of Madlib, which is super cool. I appreciated that and kind of hearing the backstory of how they all came up together. Hip hop is so much about proximity. I find the more we talk to people, it's like, dude was across the street.
Right. Like, right.
Like, well, why didn't I grow up across the street from Madlib?
You know, why didn't I go to high school with the Jizza? Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, totally. I what I love about this project is that it's like so homegrown, completely homespun. I mean, and I love projects that emerge from neighborhoods, like what you were saying. And this specifically, I guess, were B-sides and mixtape cuts from 94 to 95. So it could not be any more, you know, OG material. So yeah, man, it was really, really great to talk to Dudley, really insightful about his own art and stuff. So, and really open about that. So I always enjoy talking to artists who are, you know, down to pull back the curtain a little bit.
Absolutely, which he definitely did, and we appreciate him coming on the program. In the Beginning, Volume 1 is out now, so you should go check that out and support dope music, and also support dope podcasts like you've been doing here with the Dad Bod Rap Pod. We are on Twitter at Dad Bod Rap Pod. We are also on Instagram at Dad Bod Rap Pod. Summer's almost over, guys. We said we're going back to Instagram to do a live. They have a three-head monster option now.
A King Ghidorah?
Yeah. We have one. So how about this? If we get 10 people that hit us up on social media saying come back to Instagram Live, we will do it. And the 9 other people besides Paddington chime in. We will do it, and not a second before then. We're also on Facebook. Just look for Dad Bod Rap Pod. I started updating the Facebook a little bit. And, you know, every Thursday we come at you with new episodes, dope interviews. We got some wild announcements that I can't announce, but I'm announcing the announcement that we can't announce yet. That's how wild it is.
I say this all the time, but honestly, the worst part of all the cool shit we're doing is not being able to talk about it. It like kills me. Just
I know. Bursting.
It's the worst, but it's also kind of the best.
No, it is cool. No, it's good. It's good to have our little secrets and to know that there's like a future. Like, just not to get all deep, but like in the last 15, I guess we have to start calling it 16 months. It's just been like your notion of like, remember that time when we first went inside for quarantine and it was like, so I have no plans.
Yeah.
Like from now till forever. Because I don't know if I'm leaving this apartment again. I have no plans.
Yep.
Like for the first time in my life, I wasn't like planning a trip or like,
right.
You know, like, oh, it, of course I'll do the summer ritual vacation things I've done my whole life with my family or whatever. It's just like, nope, we got no plans. So we kind of have plans again, and it's a good feeling, but there, and it is better if you don't talk about it and you just like spring it on people. And I get that, but like, almost like I need some like non-rap friends in my life that I can talk to about this stuff. And
well,
like, they'll never know. They'll never care. But I just need to say it
to some, to someone.
Scream into the void, dude.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
So we're excited. And when we can bring you guys the news, we definitely will. But now more than ever, it's a time to support and show your support. Before we get too big and then we forget who you are, because you only came around after cool things happen. I'm very bitter that way. I have like a mental invisible list of like people who will come around once some shit pops off, and like what I'll tell them, which I totally won't, because this is
I'll like, share you,
thanks man,
I'll share you guys my list. It's no problem.
We'll exchange lists of people who
PDF.
Who a PDF? We'll get a Google Docs going of people on our future shit list. But no. For real though, we're excited that people keep fucking with the program. We're growing steadily. New opportunities abound. Still broke somehow though. So I want to dispel that. Don't let anything I'm telling you make you think that we're out here balling. But you know. All a matter of time. We appreciate your patronage and your listening ear. We'll be back next Thursday with another dope program. It's the Dad Bod Rap Pod.
Lonely Island Audio.